Learning. They can't even do that right.
Ayark finished sharpening the point of her Gaderfi and walked down from the pillars onto the desert floor. In the distant northeast, she saw a peculiar sight. One Bantha after another appeared on the horizon. The eldest member of the foraging group rode the lead beast. The fourth and final Bantha had a cable around its neck and was dragging something like a land speeder, except it was three times as long as any Ayark had ever seen.
What now?
Gaderfi raised in indignation. Ayark charged across the sand, trying to get the attention of the makeshift caravan. The hovercraft had a large flatbed surface in back, with something huge lying upon it. A vaporator tower. Ayark skidded to a halt. A young Tuscan was operating the vehicle, although certainly not as it was supposed to be operated. The thing lurched forward in fits and starts, bumping against the rear legs of the irritated Bantha in front of it. The machine was sparking with fumes rising from beneath its hood. This would likely be its last trip anywhere. The sight of a Yark caused the Bantha riders to stop. That in turn resulted in the land speeder again slamming into the rear Bantha. The animal screamed and kicked, its massive foot causing the hovering vehicle to bob and weave on the air. Ayark didn't know which warrior to smack first. She chose the one in the machine.
A settler abandoned it,
the would-be driver said.
And you didn't kill him?
The war leader's tone was enough. The young warrior bowed his head in shame.
They fled. We thought the prize was more important.
The prize?
Ayark walked along the length of the flatbed.
What are we to do with this?
She smacked the vaporator with her Gaderfi, producing a loud clang.
Are you Jawas now? Will you peddle trash for crumbs?
It makes water,
the warrior sitting atop the lead Bantha said.
Water! We need... I know what it does.
Ayark leered at the metal abomination, astonished that any Tuscan didn't know the offense it represented to the natural order.
Settlers defile the land with vaporators. We destroy them. We do not...
Ayark paused.
Wait,
she said, considering. She faced the driver.
You took this thing from the Smiling One's farm? The human war leader from the oasis and the gorge?
The driver shrank in a seat. The memory of the massacre was still fresh.
No, you told us to stay away from his lands. This was in a different place.
Well, at least they listened to one thing,
Ayark thought. Her reconnaissance had given her a sense of what territory the Smiling One considered his. Taking something belonging to him might bring his forces out on another hunt. Ayark never shrank from battle, but the others would not be ready for that meeting. It was best avoided. Sounds came from within the rock formation. Ayark turned to see children peeking down, curious about the new arrivals. Others would see the giant device too, if they left it near the entrance to the rift. Ayark pointed her Gaderfi and grunted a command.
The thing will fit in the cave beneath the overhang. Carry it up there, and try not to break it.
The young warriors looked at one another, puzzled at the reversal. Ayark's next yell put them into motion. Ayark watched it go past and calculated. She wasn't sure what they would do with it, if anything. But circumstances were dire, and even an object that had no meaning to the Tuscans might become important in the clash against the settlers. It only took a pebble to cause a sore.
Chapter 26.
Give me the bad news, Orin said, squinting upward from beneath his farmer's hat. Vika shimmied down the scaffold.
87 milliliters.
That's it? Orin was stunned. A human on Tatooine could sweat more in 5 minutes. The settings have got to be wrong. The young woman mopped her brow angrily and glared at her father.
You want to go up and see?
Orin didn't. It had been like this everywhere in the Eastern Range. The Galt Sweetwater formula had been producing fine at the test towers just a month earlier. Now, it was programmed into all the Praetormans during what normally was the most productive time of the year. And the sky seemed to have given up on them. Diagnostic?
Not gonna say anything different today than it did yesterday, Vika said.
She wiped her hands on her work pants.
Dad, we've got to do something else.
What? Orin didn't know. It wasn't normal, this performance. It went against everything he knew about the art and the science. Nothing in the atmosphere had changed. Everything was well within expected parameters. Yet each of his 10,000 credit machines was turning out pedestrian water, half a glass at a time. Some farmers simply lost the knack. He couldn't believe that was the answer. Everything happened for a reason. But it was almost as if the Tuscans' damaging of old number one a couple of weeks earlier had killed the recipe everywhere. There was no connection, of course. The machines were discrete entities, each adjusted by hand. Yet the vaporators acted as if the magic was gone. Vika scaled the tower again, preparing to close the maintenance doors set high above the reach of sand people or wildlife. Clinging to the side, she called out, "Someone's coming!" While Olbrecht's old repulsor truck puttered across the horizon from the direction of the oasis, Orin recognized it instantly, as did his son working nearby. Mullen saw his father straightening his shirt.
"Don't tell me you're gonna try again."
"A farmer lives on hope," Orin said, waving his hat at the traveler. Olbrecht's vehicle slowed to a stop near the crew. The old man squinted out the window.
"Oh," he said, recognizing Orin. "It's you."
Orin smiled. "Who else would it be on my own land, you imbecile?"
"You're leaving early, Wile."
Orin stepped to the door. "Finally tell everyone how you saved the claim from the raging horde?"
"That's not it," Olbrecht said. "Got a call. Some blasted Sandy stole one of my new towers before we even put it up."
Olbrecht launched into a rant about Tuscans, Jawas, and incompetence everywhere. Orin didn't try to hide his own amusement as he waited for a pause.
"Sorry to hear that,"
he finally interjected. "Anyone hurt?"
"Just my pocket."
Olbrecht pounded his fist against the dashboard.
"What in the suns would Tuscans want with a vaporator anyway?"
Orin had no idea. He'd never heard of such a theft before. Some vaporators were not much taller than a human, but his Praetormans and Olbrecht's new industrial machines were gargantuan. For the Tuscans to have stolen one, Olbrecht's vaunted security personnel must have fled their hauler and left the motor running. The crisis was ready-made. "Maybe time to sack some people and go with proven professionals," Orin said.
"Don't start that again."
Olbrecht glared down at Orin.
"You can't even protect the claim. How are you going to protect my place?"
He turned and spat into a cup he kept handy.
"Pesty Sandys, wasting time, costing money."
Orin was undeterred.
"Well, let's see, Wile. Since the Tuscans attacked the oasis and we answered, nobody's seen Plug Eye or any other sand people. But you just got attacked. And yours is the biggest patch that isn't protected by the settlers' call."
"What are you saying?"
Angered, Olbrecht stopped his engine, causing the repulsor truck to settle on the sand with a thump.
"I'm saying, maybe the few Tuscans we let live have figured out
where the weak spots are. And you're it. Ulbricht swore.
Ah, you're crazy. Tuscan's got a head like a boulder.
They're incapable of thought.
He looked back out at Orin's vaporator tower looming above.
Besides, say it's true.
I can put up my own siren, same as you.
Yeah, but will anyone respond to them? Orin fished in his pocket and found the remote activator. After the Oasis raid, he carried it everywhere now.
It's not just the sound, Wile. With this, I can get an army here. An army I can send to get your vaporator back. And crack some skulls in the process.
Those bums aren't an army. They just want the free drinks, you...
Whatever it takes.
Orin looked at him cannily. Now, I can't get you in at the old rates. Prices have gone up. And bringing in all your territory is going to incur costs you're going to have to bear. Last in, you know.
Make that never in.
Ulbricht restarted his engine.
I don't care if Jabba the Hutt signs up. While Ulbricht takes care of his own business.
Orin threw up his hands. With a metallic groan, the repulsor truck continued on its way. Mullen looked at his father.
Told you it was a waste of time.
Figured it was worth one more shot. Orin said, this close to the harvest, nobody but Wile has any money. He thought for a second and chuckled. And maybe that Kenobi. Mullen raised an eyebrow.
Kenobi?
Ben. Guy that made a fool out of you, remember?
That's his name, Orin said.
Quickly, he recounted Ben's questions about extending protection far to the east.
Out near Anchorhead?
Vika asked, climbing down the ladder.
What business has he got out there?
No idea.
Orin strained to remember details from the conversation. Ben had mentioned the Lars farm.
Why would he care what happens out that way?
Vika chucked her toolkit into the back of their work vehicle.
You really think he has money? That he wasn't just talking?
She grinned.
I thought you said he was an idiot.
That I did, Orin said, staring at the Joondalen peaks far away. Man lives on the fringe, babbling to himself and dressing like the Tuscans stole his wardrobe.
That's the sort of human driftwood your mother would take in.
And leave with, he did not have to say.
But crazy people need protecting, too. Some even have money.
Probably not this crazy person, though. Orin knew it wasn't worth wasting thoughts on the man. Ben hadn't been around in days, and there were bigger problems coming up. He took a last forlorn look at the vaporator. Let's pack it in. We're not going to fix this by the deadline. Mullen was startled.
No harvest. But those people who came to see you
shouldn't have been allowed anywhere near the claim,
Orin said, aggravated. It had been a sore point in the family. Somebody on the work crews should have stopped Master Bupa before he reached the claim, or at least alerted Orin.
Vika stood beside her brother. She looked serious for once.
What will we do?
Your great-granddaddy told me something,
Orin said.
Every problem's got two solutions. You wait until you figure two ways out of a problem. And then you try them both at the same time. Because by the time you need a backup plan, it's too late.
Orin paused and thought about what was scheduled to happen in the next 24 hours, and about the plans he had to deal with it all.
You go see if Zed's ready to work, he said, flashing a reassuring smile as he climbed into his vehicle. I've got some things to prepare.
Chapter 27.
Lily nearly dropped her packages when she opened the door.
Annalene!
In the middle of the claim's dining area, a scaffold sat tipped at an angle, two of its supports wedged against the domed ceiling above. Annalene clung to the top of the structure, dangling precariously. She looked over her shoulder at her visitor.
Hi, Lily. What's new?
The Zeltron set her parcels down and rushed over. A bucket lay overturned in the middle of a white soapy puddle, near where the rickety tower stood.
You're washing the ceiling?
Not anymore. No. Annalene's wet hand slipped again. In grabbing hold, she set the whole structure quaking.
I've been calling for Jade, but I think he's in the stockroom.
Asleep, you mean? Lily pushed a table away to reach the scaffold. She steadied it long enough for Annalene to twist around and reach for one of the vertical supports. Carefully, Annalene climbed down.
Ah, thanks, she said, breathing deeply. I was afraid I'd have to wait for the dinner rush.
Lily looked around. The afternoon crowd was always thinnest during harvest time. The store was empty, except for old Herbally Napti, poking through a basket of remnants.
Didn't Herbally offer to help?
No, but she asked me to help her, Annalene said, drying her hands on her overalls. I'm pleased to say I know what's in inventory, even in midair.
She turned the fallen bucket upright and searched for the mop, as if nothing had ever happened. Lily marveled.
You decided to wash the ceiling alone.
Putting up sealant, actually, Annalene said.
You guys did a good job cleaning up after the raid, but I wanted to get at those blaster score marks on the pore stone before they caused cracks.
What, in 30 years?
Annalene shrugged.
I have the time now.
She started mopping. Mystified, Lily walked back to reclaim her packages.
Good thing I came. Though if you'd kept that activator on you, you could have set off the settler's call.
That would have gone over well with everyone in the fields for sure, Annalene said. I can see the hollow now. Woman summons militia to save her from her own stupidity. Giving the floor up for later, Annalene walked behind the counter. She looked in wonderment at the stack of packages Lily had brought to ship. Lily was a talented sculptor in her spare time, specializing in primitive designs. She had customers on worlds all over the Outer Rim.
How do you find these people?
Annalene asked.
Ex-boyfriends,
the Zeltron said, smiling primly. She ran a crimson finger down a digital list of names on the manifest she was holding.
They're all still fans.
Of your work? Or you?
An artist tries not to ask,
Lily said.
You could use a hobby yourself, Annie. You've been a bundle of energy for the last few weeks. What's going on?
I don't know,
Annalene said, processing the packages. Lily was right, of course. Just during the last couple of weeks, Annalene had changed the layout of the packaged goods section, helped Callie refence the dewback run, and streamlined the store's accounting procedures. That morning, she had built a new table by hand, especially for Bomer and his new hover chair, when he finally got the okay to return and resume his calf intake. If the facts of her life hadn't changed in recent days, she'd made sure it felt like a whirl all the same.
I know what's wrong, Lily said. No advice requested, Lily.
Annalene stopped transcribing.
Look, I get it. The big things in my world are never going to change. But there's a lot of little stuff I can fix. And I might as well get to it.
Fooey on that, Lily said. I say you haven't seen Ben since he ran out of here that time, and it's driving you up the wall.
And onto the ceiling,
she added. Annalene rolled her eyes.
Really? She said icily. What makes you think that?
Because you've just given my latest masterpiece a shipping label for something called the Kenobi system.
Annalene looked at the letters she'd absentmindedly printed and blushed. Oops. It's okay, Lily said, gesturing to the mislabeled package.
It is a fertility statue.
That's all I need, Annalene laughed. She shook her head and corrected the label. Okay, I admit it. It bothers me that he never came back. She'd almost lost track of how long it had been since the Tuscan attack, and the crazy, surreal day after. The visit by Master Bupa, the strange change in Oren's behavior toward her, and Ben's vanishing act upon becoming the center of attention. He hadn't returned since. I guess we scared him off, she said. Newcomers were like that sometimes. They didn't know the locals gossiped about every new arrival, just to forget about them when someone else came along. Only two people had even mentioned Ben to Annalene recently. Oren asked occasionally whether he'd returned, and Callie asked the same thing, only every 5 minutes. Oren appeared in the hallway from the garage. Annalene saw him give a moment's glance to the scaffold before disappearing into his office without a word. That's another weird one, she whispered to Lily. Oren's best behavior around Annalene had been a thing of wonder lately. It was the new story captivating the regular's attention. You want to talk to someone? Talk to him. Lily snorted and made a pronouncement. Annie, my friend, Ben is exactly what you've needed. How do you mean? Because you've kept Oren at arm's length for years, Lily said. And he got used to it. But now that there's another suitor for Princess Annie, he's got to make his move. Annalene cast a horrified glance at the office door. I don't want him to make his move. Is that so? Lily smirked. I think you want Oren interested, so it'll force your mystery man to do something. You're mentally ill, Annalene said. Seriously, what is it with you Zeltrons? You'd matchmake for droids if they'd listen. They do listen, Annie. That's why there are so many droids. Annalene groaned. This really wasn't what she needed or was looking for. Things were fine with Oren as they were. Well, no, they aren't. But Oren was more an older brother, or sometimes a third child. He had been Danar's friend, and that was how she still saw him. Why did he want that to change now? She started to say something when Lily shushed her. Oren emerged from the office, having changed his shirt and neatened his hair after his day in the fields. He saw the women and smiled. How are my favorite people today? One of us was nearly burying the other, Lily said, gesturing to the scaffold. You've got to get Annie out of this place before she starts alphabetizing the oil cans. Beaming, Oren strolled behind the counter. Have no fear. Oren Galt has the plan, and it's in motion already. He put his arm around Annalene and gave her a half hug. You're getting tomorrow off. He grinned down at her. Happy birthday. Annalene pulled away. What do you mean? I mean, I've just talked with Tar Lup, he said, referring to the Calwell's one-time assistant. He's got some time off from his place in Isley, and I've convinced him to spend tomorrow here watching the store. Why can't Jade? Green eyes stared suspicious. Wait, where will I be? Mos Eisley, you deserve a day in the city, he said. And I want you to take the whole family. Callie can close up the livery. Nobody's around right now anyway. His eyes narrowed. Take Jabe, too. Maybe if you spend more time together as a family, things will improve. Stupefied, Annalene looked to Lily. The Zeltron was wide-eyed, listening with rapt attention. You're going with us, I suppose, Annalene asked Oren. Oh, no, he said, fishing around in his pocket. Not with the harvest. Right. She looked at him, still not fathoming his intent.
Why Mos Eisley?
Orin found what he was looking for. A small, sealed envelope. Here, he said. It's the other part of your surprise, to make sure you go. Open it this evening. Annalene took the envelope.
What are you up to, Orin?
The farmer laughed. Just make sure I'm around when you open it. He winked at Lily and stepped out from behind the counter.
My birthday's the day after tomorrow, Annalene said.
This offer is good for tomorrow only, Orin proclaimed, walking toward his office. I've spent all afternoon making the plans. Don't send poor Tar away. The door closed behind him and locked. Lily clutched for the envelope.
Give me that. I want to see.
No, Annalene said, pulling it away.
She felt dizzy. What in the world is going on now? Meditation. I had the dream again. It was like I've described before. I wasn't myself. But I saw the world through something. A tunnel. A filter. And then I heard a scream. You're tired of hearing about this dream, I expect. I've had it once a week since coming to Tatooine. I always wake and wonder. I always feel it's about Anakin somehow. Only the last couple of editions have changed some. The tunnel is narrower, brighter. Normally the view is hazy and red. This time, it was almost like seeing through, well, a Tusken's eyes. As strange as that sounds. And hearing the scream didn't hit me as hard this time. I felt more apart, aloof. In the past, it's had more of an effect on me. I don't know what it means. I'm worried the dream represents the smothering of light in the galaxy, and my own misgivings about being far from the scene. Could I really stay here so long that I no longer feel the cries of those Palpatine harms? Don't worry, Qui-Gon, I'm not speaking this out loud. I'm still ashamed at what you must think of that horrendous blunder when I was overheard. You must think I'm a Padawan all over again. But I know how it happened. I've been focusing too hard on trying to contact you, trying to replicate the feelings I was having that time you spoke to Yoda and me. I was trying to separate myself mentally from my surroundings, and because of that, I didn't sense Callie's approach. It doesn't seem that the girl overheard anything too revealing, or saw me holding Anakin's lightsaber. The Force was with me there. And there are apparently a number of people around whose names sound like Kenobi, so nobody's drawn the connection yet. Still, I can't take any more chances. I was getting too drawn into the lives of the people at the Oasis. It's ironic. You were the one who always told me to focus more on the living Force, the lives of those around us now, rather than the big picture that Master Yoda ascribed to. Living here, getting involved in this little world with its little dramas? It's been enlightening. I missed all this while rushing about to save the galaxy, seeing that for many people the smaller struggles are just as important to them as our larger ones are to us. It was a good lesson for me to learn. But it has to end there. So I'm strictly confining my travels to my mission. I checked on the boy earlier this week. The farm seems fine. I managed to steer clear of Owen Lars this time. The man doesn't like me at all. And I'm going to keep working on the house. I have to do something about this coolant unit, which I think was built in the time of Arca Jeth. But don't worry. There are other stores on Tatooine besides the claim. Not many, but they exist.
Chapter 28.
Happy birthday, Annie! Annalene waved back from the window of the speeder truck. Thanks! There wasn't any point in telling the farmhand that her birthday was still a day away. Everyone who'd visited the claim since the night before had heard the reason for her journey. And harvest workers on three previous hillsides had already yelled the same greeting to her, all of them excited for her. Annalene was excited too. Dressed nicely, she was heading to Mos Eisley, her daughter in the passenger seat and son in back. And none of them had argued yet at all. It was a birthday miracle. They were in the light van too today. Danar had brought the retired Soro submodel back into service the year they married, and it still handled most of the heavy work for the claim. Orin had needed his USV-5 landspeeder back for some reason, but Annalene didn't mind. She was still reeling, not quite believing the contents of the envelope Orin had given her. Jabe and Callie were discussing it in the darkened cab now. "I've been telling you Orin's a great guy," Jabe said.
"I guess I was wrong," Callie said.
His older sister, also cleaned up in colorful clothes from off the rack, read from the gold-colored slip in the light from the window.
"To Annie, this certificate, good for Ben!"
Annalene glanced at her daughter, startled.
"What? There!"
Callie said, lowering the document and pointing out her window.
"To the right, Ben Kenobi!"
Annalene braked and banked the massive machine at the same time. Sure enough, Ben and Rue came into her field of view. It was a comical sight, one that reminded her of her first visit to his place and the angry bantha calf. Ben was on his hands and knees in the middle of a blasted plane trying to talk to Rue. The Eopi was lying on her belly in the sand, legs folded underneath as she chewed on a lonely patch of desert foliage. Her harness was connected to a makeshift sledge, upon which sat a heavy and ancient coolant pump. Annalene pulled the light van up alongside. "Going somewhere?" she asked.
"That was the original idea," Ben said. "It isn't working out."
Annalene stopped the engine. Callie went for her door latch. Jabe leaned over the front seat, aggravated.
"Not again, Mom. This guy helped us and needs help now," Annalene said. "You just sit here and stay out of the suns."
When Annalene climbed out of the vehicle and onto the desert floor, Callie was already there, trying her best to get Ben to notice her festive red outfit. But the cloaked man's attention remained on his Eopi.
"Rue just stopped," Ben said. "She's eating this, whatever it is."
"It's desert sage," Annalene said.
"I didn't think anything grew here."
"Something grows everywhere."
Annalene knelt next to him and stroked the lackadaisical Eopi's snout.
"There, girl, it's all right."
Seemingly discomfited by Annalene's proximity, Ben stood up and gestured to the cargo.
"I can't seem to get her to move. I keep thinking I've attached the sledge wrong."
"No, it's fine," Annalene said.
"Then she's just objecting to carrying extra weight,"
Ben said, standing over the prone animal.
"That's for sure,"
Callie said. She tried to stifle a chuckle and failed. Annalene gestured for her to pipe down, but found herself smiling too. Ben stared at them, mildly flustered.
"I'm missing something, aren't I?"
"No, you're getting something,"
Annalene said, kneeling beside the animal and touching her abdomen.
"In a couple of days, it looks like."
"You can't mean..."
Ben looked at Rue's midsection, flabbergasted.
"Pregnant?"
he stammered.
"That's simply not possible. I only have one Eopi."
"Not for long," Callie said, snickering.
Annalene scooted over and felt Rue's abdomen.
"How long have you had her?"
Ben shuffled.
I don't recall. I bought her some time ago."
His brow furrowed.
"You don't think this,
happened at the Oasis, do you?
Callie burst out laughing. Annalene smiled too, but looked down so as not to embarrass Ben any further.
Eopi gestation times are a bit longer than that. It looks like you got two for the price of one on that purchase.
One cannot cast blame in matters of love, Ben said.
Or whatever. He cracked a smile in spite of himself and knelt. He rubbed the animal's face.
You've been keeping secrets, my little friend.
Congratulations, Grandpa, Annalene said. With Callie's help, Annalene removed the harness from Rue's back. Freed, the animal stood up and resumed chomping on the weed. Annalene looked at the coolant unit. Pretty beat up, she said.
It's seen use, Ben said.
In the great hyperspace war, maybe. Annalene shook her head.
I've never seen a coolant pump this old.
Ben cleared his throat.
Yes, well, I was hoping they've seen one at the repair shop in Bastine.
He gestured to the east.
You're going to another store?
Callie said, eyes filling with dismay.
People are like that, sweetie,
Annalene said. Give them a discount once and they'll never respect you again. A snarky voice bellowed from inside the darkened window of the light van.
You won't get that fixed in Bastine.
Ben looked at Annalene and raised an eyebrow. Annalene rolled her eyes.
My son,
the other hermit. She walked to the speeder truck and slapped the window frame.
How do you know that, Jabe? You haven't even seen it.
Jabe peeked out at them.
The supply shop in Bastine is closed. The Geeler's son is getting married. They'll be gone for a week.
Ben looked worriedly up at the sons and then down at the damaged unit. He swallowed.
A week, you say?
Or more, Jabe said, vanishing back into the darkness of the back seat.
The wedding is on Naboo. They decided to make a vacation of it.
How wonderful for them,
Ben said, deflated.
Callie grabbed at her mother's arm, nearly knocking her down. Mom! Ben can come into Mos Eisley with us.
Mos Eisley?
Ben's face froze. He looked to the east, his expression apprehensive.
I don't need to go to Mos Eisley.
Jabe's voice called out again.
Hear that? He doesn't need to go to Mos Eisley.
You hush, Annalene said. She looked back at the coolant pump.
You can get same-day service there, she said.
Ben waved his hands.
No, I'm sure you're on a supply run. You'll need room.
Callie bubbled with enthusiasm.
No, it's fine. We're not carrying anything.
You're not?
No.
Annalene's daughter found the document in her pocket and thrust it toward Ben.
Read this.
Without taking the slip from the girl's hand, Ben read aloud the hand-printed words.
To Annie, this certificate is good for a Soro Sub JG-8 luxury land speeder at Delroy Speeders of Mos Eisley. Ask for gone. Sorry for all the trouble with your family speeder. Hope this makes up for it.
Ben paused before concluding.
Happy birthday. Love, Oren.
Ben looked back at Annalene, his eyebrows slightly raised. He smiled gently.
Does this mean...
I don't know. Oren's been like this lately.
How should I know what it means?
Callie clapped her hands elated.
I know what it means. It means I'm getting a new land speeder. Mom's old one, as soon as Glomer fixes it. Like blazes!
Jabe yelled out from the light van.
We haven't settled that!
Annalene shrugged.
We're still negotiating a distribution of assets.
Maybe they'll both get it.
Is that wise?
Ben asked. Oh, yes, Annalene said. This way, when they finally decide to run away from home, they'll get farther.
Now come along with us.
No, really, that's not necessary.
Ben pointed to a pair of figures by a tower on a distant northern ridge.
I'll just ask the folks whose land this is for help.
Annalene squinted. Don't bother, she said, recognizing them. This is while Ulbricht's spread were on. After the Tuscans ripped him off yesterday, his sentries are probably chained to the Vaporators.
Anything to save the skinflint from joining the settlers' call, Jabe said from the van. He'll learn one day.
Annalene pointed at Ben with mock sternness.
And if you keep fighting serendipity, Master Kenobi, it's going to fight back.
Now come on, she said, walking back to the sledge. Let's get this unit into the truck. Surrendering, Ben patted Rue's head.
Should we carry her with us?
A screech came from the vehicle's interior.
You're not putting that animal in my truck!
Jabe yelled. You're... Annalene sighed. A minute ago you wanted my land speeder. The light van went silent.
He's sulking,
she said to Ben. But that's okay. I think our expectant mom will be happier at home. She turned Rue West and gave her a pat on the behind. Promptly, the animal began loping off, retracing the sandy trail left by the sledge.
She'll find her way.
Ben looked after Rue, concerned.
You know, I really should go with her, to make sure she'll be all right.
Callie laughed. I don't know what other trouble she could get into.
Don't worry, Annalene said, wiping her hands together.
She'll be home before the happy event, and you'll be living in a cool and comfortable house. Resigned, Ben turned to help them lift the coolant unit.
I really do hate to prevail upon you to change your plans.
You're not changing these plans, Callie gushed. We're going to Mos Eisley!
Annalene smiled. Ben's reluctance was almost charming. The man, she suspected, simply didn't want to be in anyone's debt. She'd just have to convince him it wasn't a concern. The clan has spoken, she said. You'd better come along. Ben responded with a pained smile. The Shista Vanen had an evil-looking face, Orin thought. Nothing but fangs, pointy ears, and mud-colored hair. And yet, Tar Lup was as cheerful a being as he'd ever known. More cheerful still, standing behind the counter of Danar's claim in his neat city-bought jacket.
Thanks again for this chance, Master Galt,
Tar said, the natural growl in his voice somehow sounding amiable.
It's good to be in charge, even for a day. I don't get that in my regular job.
Standing atop a chair in the dining room, Orin lowered the holocam he was holding. That's fine, Tar. Glad you could come back and help out. Snapping the device off, he stepped down. He made sure he, too, was looking his best today, in the fineries Annalene had ordered from off-world. He needed to. Pausing in front of the substitute clerk, Orin looked down at the holo recorder in his hands.
Oh, this is part of another surprise for Annalene, he said. Gonna get her some decent flooring in here for a change.
Tar smiled toothily.
That's wonderful. I was always fond of the Calwells.
Me too, Orin said, stepping past Bomer at his table. The Rodian had picked a day when Annalene was out to make his return, but she wasn't missing much. Patched up, but heavily medicated, Bomer seemed even more catatonic than usual. Orin walked through the gap in the counter. Tar, I need to get back in there for another second, if you don't mind.
Certainly.
The Shista Vanen stepped out of the way.
That'll do it, Orin thought, taking another look at the electronic manifest behind the cash box.
He checked the chrono on the wall. He had everything he needed and plenty of time to get to his meetings. All was going according to plan. Both plans. Vika walked in from the parking area.
Ready when you are, Dad.
She walked to the bar and pulled her flask from her vest. Hopping onto the surface, she reached past the startled Tar to grab a bottle.
No, you don't,
Orin said, before she could start filling. Not today. Whatever. Irritated, Vika dropped the bottle, which landed back into place with a glassy clank. Orin passed her the holorecorder. Tar watched, puzzled, as father and daughter walked toward the exit.
Will you be back for lunch, sir?
No, I'll be out most of the day, he said, giving the store a last look. But, tell Annalene. I'll have something to talk to her about tonight. Tar responded, but Orin didn't hear. He had things to do.
Chapter 29.
For the first half of Annalene's life, Mos Eisley had been no more than a concept. Her father had feared the place, and clerking gave her few opportunities to travel. But the city was always out there, a magnet drawing the starships she occasionally saw high overhead. It had inspired her young imagination. Images she had seen depicted Mos Eisley as a knotted web of crowded streets separating dusty domes used and decaying. She hadn't wanted to believe the pictures. Those vessels in the sky hailed from cosmopolitan places with shining spires. Why would they visit Tatooine at all if the city weren't something special? She'd looked forward to finding out for herself. When the day came, it was one that already ran high with expectations. Her wedding day. After the raucous send-off from their friends, Danar had surprised her by steering Orin's borrowed landspeeder past Bastine and continuing east. As the kilometers sped by, the young bride's anticipation only grew. Spacecraft that soundlessly soared in the oasis sky rumbled and gleamed here, all heading to or from the steaming mirage on the horizon. For a few wonderful minutes, Annalene had allowed herself to imagine that her surprise honeymoon included a trip on one of those starships. To the core worlds, perhaps. Or better, to one of the wild places shown in the university safari brochure. Reaching the streets of Mos Eisley, which turned out to be as shabby and hectic as the pictures had shown, did nothing to still her hopes. Her sights were set higher. Danar had pulled the vehicle up to the Twin Shadows Inn, an acceptably clean, if far from posh, establishment off Kerner Plaza. The stay was the gift, all that a rural shop owner starting out could afford. But even with her stellar hopes dashed, Annalene soon realized that if she was looking for an exotic locale with strange creatures, Mos Eisley easily sufficed. Kerner Plaza was a relatively upscale neighborhood, with clean showrooms alongside outdoor bazaars. Located near the Republic Traveler's Aid office, the streets were safe enough to walk at twilight without blaster in hand. And Danar had even taken her to dinner at the Court of the Fountain, where she had marveled at every sight. Only a hut-owned establishment was rich enough to use water for decoration. Mos Eisley was a violent, congested mess, but it was also exciting and surprising. A doorway jammed half open to another dimension of adventure. If Mos Eisley wasn't the next best thing to going to the stars, it was still several steps closer than anything else on Tatooine. To this day, Annalene remembered every moment of the trip. She and Danar had never made it back to Mos Eisley together. Some store emergency always interfered. But Annalene had returned several times since Danar's death, usually alone, but once with each child individually. She and Danar had always talked of bringing the whole family here at some point, but the chance had never come. Now, She walked the streets of the city with both children at once, and for the first time, with a new companion. Ben walked behind the group, his cowl pulled low over his head. He stepped quickly to keep up with the Cowells, saying little. They looked like any other family out on the town, only with a son unhappy to have his father along, and a father who wasn't too thrilled either.
He could have waited at the repair shop, Jabe said as the group turned a corner.
It was going to be 5 hours, Callie said.
I wouldn't have minded, Ben said pleasantly.
There was a chair there.
It had an engine manifold sitting on it, Annalene said, shaking her head. Jabe's annoyance at their hooded tag-along hadn't lessened since the testy ride-in from the desert. The boy started walking faster through the crowd, ahead of his mother and sister.
Slow down, Jabe, Annalene said. Stay with the group.
She looked back at Ben and smiled. You too. Ben gamely followed, but Annalene could tell wandering a busy city wasn't his first choice for a good time. Strange. He had seemed so well-traveled to her. Well, maybe she could change that. Turning the corner into Kerner Plaza, however, the foursome encountered a different form of traffic. Dozens of hammer-headed Ithorians thronged the open space, stomping their tree-trunk feet and jubilantly waving soundmakers and silver tassels. Within a second, the crowd of brown-skinned giants engulfed the human visitors.
I think we've wandered into a wedding, Ben yelled, straining to be heard over the din. They have a lot of them here, Annalene called back, smiling.
A leather-skinned Ithorian danced past on spindly legs. Spying Annalene, the long-necked creature grabbed her by the shoulders and spun with her into the festive crowd. Whirling, Annalene could see Jabe reaching for his blaster, and then Ben placing his hand on the boy's wrist. Callie was in the dance now, too, as was, Annalene saw, just about every poor pedestrian who had wandered past. The twirling slowed, long enough for her to see a panicked Ben in the arms of a tall, female Ithorian bedecked in garlands. The mother of the bride? Annalene didn't know. As they both spun, she could only tell that Ben definitely didn't want to dance, and that he just as surely had no choice, as the wave of partygoers surged again. Finally, the alien released her, centrifugal force whipping her away to the side of the street. She braced herself against a stone column, laughing between gasps for breath. A delighted Callie broke free next, followed by Ben. His hood down and hair mussed, he looked like a man who'd just finished a pod race. Reclaiming her hat, Annalene scanned the crowd for Jabe. She found him against the nearest building, leaning standoffishly and clearly prepared to pull his blaster on anyone who came near.
I thought you wanted to get out of the store to have fun, she said.
Not my idea of fun, her son said.
His flustered look vanished a second later, however, as a procession of scantily clad Twi'lek women emerged from the building behind him, carrying trays of multicolored drinks.
Well, we've found your idea of fun, Annalene thought.
Another group of servers followed. Twi'lek males, their attire even more unsuited to the dangerous suns, brought silver platters with exotic foodstuffs for anyone and everyone.
This party is getting better all the time, Callie said, smiling. Can we stay here?
Annalene looked over at Ben. He looked gray. She couldn't imagine he wanted to stay in the festival a second longer. Looking at the building the service had emerged from, though, she realized where she was. Serendipity, she thought, amused. Gesturing for the beleaguered Ben to wait for a moment, she took her children aside.
You kids can have lunch down here. 1 hour, she said.
Two,
Callie said.
Three,
Jabe added, gawking at the women. An hour and a half, Annalene said. She jabbed her finger against Jabe's sternum. You're on alert. We're not going to have another Mos Espa. If you leave Callie's sight for an instant or get near anything stronger than blue milk, she's going to call me. I'll be here in a flash, and you'll be in a world of hurt. She looked around at the crazed partiers.
And don't either of you get engaged to, well, anyone.
Callie laughed. Rolling his eyes, her brother nodded. Where will you be? He asked. Annalene looked back at Ben, standing out of earshot.
I have some questions that need answers, she said.
You kids have fun. Hat in hand, Orin walked down the steps from the branch office of the Argau Investment Trust. There wasn't any point in being dejected, as the official had said nothing he hadn't heard once a month for 3 years. Bankers annoyed Orin more than lawyers did. What to make of people who had so much money they were willing to drop piles of it on others across the galaxy just because they had an idea? Even a good idea, Orin thought. But at least the banker had confirmed what he wanted to know. He removed the holocam from his satchel and tossed it into the open back seat of the USV-5. Mullen was there, snoring. Orin looked around. He didn't know where Vika had flitted. "Wake up," he said, slapping his sleeping son with his hat. By reflex, Mullen reached for his shoulder holster before recognizing his father.
"Well?"
"It's going according to plan. Plan one, anyway." Orin scanned the buildings across from the bank until he found what he was looking for. Locating the cantina, he found Vika too, emerging with three scruffy-looking human spacers, all of whom looked quite unable to fly despite the noon hour. Seeing her father, she made her goodbyes.
"She sure makes friends fast," Orin said, resigned. "That's because she always buys,"
Mullen said, slipping into the front seat. Hands on his hips, Orin glared at Vika as she approached.
"Do you ever listen?"
"I'm fine,"
Vika said, knocking the holo emitter out of the way and sliding into the back seat of the landspeeder.
"I'll be ready."
She seemed sober enough, Orin thought. Well, he couldn't worry about rehabilitating his family now. There'd be a chance for that after. He strapped on his blaster and climbed into the passenger seat. The engine started, and the landspeeder moved back into the crowded streets of Mos Eisley. "Set the windshield to opaque," he said. "I don't want to run into Annie today."
Chapter 30.
Annalene found the cafe again easily. She and Danar had discovered it years earlier, just paces from the Twin Shadows Inn and up the street from the building from which the Twi'lek had emerged. Ben didn't resist when Annalene took him by the hand, leading him past the crowd and inside.
"Thank you,"
he said in the lobby, exhaling.
"I owe you a life debt."
"You sure hate crowds," she said, climbing the stairs to the upper level.
"When Ithorians dance, it's best to get off the floor."
The master of the house greeted them warmly. Annalene had always enjoyed Café Tattoo, too, including it on her solo trips to the spaceport. The kindly old man led her to the awning-shaded balcony overlooking the plaza. Ben chose a chair at a table away from other diners. She sat across from Ben, ordered the lunch special for them both,
and clasped her hands together, ready to study her subject. She had been waiting forever for another chance to talk to him alone. Now, she couldn't figure out which question to ask first, if Ben would let her. He shifted uncomfortably in his chair.
The clerk at the repair shop did say 5 hours, no?
5 hours, she said.
Take your hood off. You're in a civilized place now.
Ben complied.
I was worried when you didn't come back to the store, she said. It's been a long time. Ah, yes. I've been busy,
he said, raising his glass to drink.
With? Things.
Things, she said, unbelieving. It was amazing how the man could use something as small as a cup to hide behind. Seemingly sensing her frustration, he set the drink down and grinned.
You've seen the grounds of my palace. I'm still working through the junk that might be toxic.
Annalene nodded.
I was afraid we'd scared you off, with Callie snooping around, telling everyone your last name.
Most people have one, Ben said. Why shouldn't I? Annalene put her elbows on the table and leaned over toward him.
I was also worried that maybe Orin had scared you off, she said in a quieter voice.
Oh, no. Ben sat casually back in his chair, putting some distance between them. I like Orin, and he seems to like you. This week, Annalene said.
Usually that means he wants something.
The land speed is a nice gesture. Perhaps he's in earnest. Annalene sat up straight, regarding him skeptically. Really? Ben shifted again, tracing his finger around the circumference of his glass.
You know, I don't know much about these things, but sometimes people's attitudes can change over the years. They can get closer.
He smiled at her, awkwardly.
Uh-huh.
Annalene reached for her glass and drank. Now she was the one hiding her expression. Inwardly, she was amused to no end. She didn't know if Ben was trying to palm her off on Orin or not, but he had just revealed some truth. He might stop runaway dewbacks and talk to Tuskens, but Ben Kenobi was on completely foreign territory when it came to discussing matters of the heart. A rickety server droid approached from behind Ben, saving him from further embarrassment. Annalene recognized the mechanical.
Hi, Gigi.
The bipedal, violet-colored droid set down the food and bowed.
It is nice of you to remember, madam.
The droid was an ancient model. Its hands quivered slightly as it placed the plates before the couple.
Good appetite to you, patrons.
Annalene smiled as the electronic waiter rattled away. GGH served us when Dana and I were here on our honeymoon, she told Ben.
It was the first time a droid had ever brought me anything. I felt like the Queen of Alderaan.
Ben took fork in hand.
You could have a droid at the Oasis, I'm sure. The farmhands don't like to see them.
They take away jobs on the range.
Well, you seem kind to them,
he noted.
No reason not to be, she said.
Ben smiled and began to eat. All through lunch, Annalene felt like a tracker losing a trail. Ben still seemed to have that sadness hidden deep within. It came out whether he wanted it to or not. But every attempt to nudge him toward a personal revelation resulted in his nimble escape to another topic. She couldn't become cross with him. Even this verbal fencing had the same fun and easiness of their lunch the day of the pod races. Rather, she began to feel sorry for how much work he was putting in, changing subjects.
Fine,
she decided as she finished her dessert. If Ben was going to insist on being more interested in her life than in talking about his, well, she'd make the sacrifice. And Ben did seem willing to listen to her entire litany of worries about Callie and what future she might find. The livery wasn't yet drudgery for her, but there weren't many options beyond that. Would she really be happy married to some farmhand? And, of course, they talked about Jabe. Annalene had kept closer watch on her son since the Tuscan massacre. The boy wasn't out of control, but for some reason, Jabe wanted her to think he was. Ben seemed to share her concern. When people show you signs, it's important to read them, he said. But mostly they talked about her, about her childhood and animals, about her father and the failed ranch, about her hopes to study and how that direction had changed, and about the thing that above and beyond Tuscan raiders, Orin's antics, or even her children's upbringing occupied the most territory in her life. The claim. And Ben wasn't having any of her complaints about it. I know you love it. I've seen you. You enjoy holding court, being the center that holds it all together. Annalene laughed. You want the job? It's yours. Oh, no, Ben said, picking at his dessert. I've never been one for the politics of large rooms. He took another bite. Or smaller ones. Annalene smiled. Consider parties, he said. They've always struck me as big, uncontrolled experiments in social dynamics. It's as if you're stress-testing every relationship you have at once. You're having lots of parties out there on the Junland? Just me and the EOP, assumed to be plural. And assorted eavesdroppers, Annalene said. If you don't mind my saying so, you don't seem cut out for the hermit life. Mouthful of cake, Ben stopped himself from laughing. We were talking about you. Right. Well, life at the store isn't what it's cracked up to be. Annalene looked at the frayed awning above and clenched her fists. Okay. If you really want to hear it, here goes. I'm listening. You see the claim as a place to come to, she said. To interact, to get away from the nothingness. Well, everyone else around the oasis sees it the same way. Everyone. They show up before the second sun is up in the morning, and then they never leave. I have noticed a certain resident status for some. For some? Annalene's hands shook on the table, rattling her dinnerware. Danar used to joke that the claim was the 10th largest city on Tatooine when it was full. And I'm not sure that's far off. She looked down at her empty plate. I'm barely holding together my own family, and yet I'm keeping all these other people going too. I'm not just feeding and clothing my own. I've got everyone. Catching her breath, she looked up at him. He was still listening intently, but she was embarrassed all the same. Sorry, she said. Am I ranting? Ben spoke calmly, that stoic reserve in full evidence. A life that seems small on the outside can be limitless on the inside. Even a person living in the remotest place can be concerned about hundreds. Or the whole galaxy. Annalene stared at him, mesmerized. Who are you? Crazy Ben, your son says. He grinned. I actually think I like the sound of... Ben stopped suddenly. Annalene followed his gaze across the street and saw a human in a black uniform and hat standing beside a figure fully clad in white armor. A spacesuit of some kind.
What is that? She asked.
Ben slid back in his chair away from the balcony railing.
Well, I'm not sure,
he said, his voice lower and softer than it had been. He looked again out of the corner of his eye.
I would almost say it looks like a clone trooper. I've seen hollows of them.
He studied the figure for another second before looking away.
But the uniforms are slightly different.
Annalene watched the strange pair. They weren't looking at her, or even at the festival going on all around them. Instead, they were examining the building they were standing in front of. That suit's gotta be awful in this heat, she said.
I wonder why they're here.
I don't know, Ben said, head down as he scraped his plate.
What are they doing now?
Spying the data pad in the hand of the hatted figure, Annalene recognized the behavior instantly.
They're taking inventory, she said. That used to be the Republic's aid station on Tatooine.
I don't know what it is now, given whatever has been going on out there.
What has been going on? Ben asked.
You'd know more than I would. I've never left the planet, she said. But if they're with this new order or whatever it is, maybe they're still figuring out what it is they own.
Ben said.
He glanced around, newly uneasy. Annalene checked her chrono.
I guess we better get down there ourselves and get back to the kids. You know what? I think we should wait a while.
Ben stretched and patted his stomach.
To go down to the street.
A little surprised, Annalee nodded.
Sure. More time to talk, I guess. And it's the strangest thing. I'm suddenly developing a chill.
Ben rubbed at his throat.
I hope I'm not coming down with something.
With that, he pulled his hood back over his head and sank lower in his seat. Annalene shook her head. Obfuscation Kenobi was back. Across town, Mullen signaled from his post near the round building.
Nothing yet,
Vika said, speaking into her comlink. In the passenger seat of the landspeeder, Oren shook his head.
They said docking bay 87.
For the third time that minute, he checked to see if his blaster was in his holster. He just felt more comfortable knowing it was there. Oren knew the docking bay wasn't where the second of his two Mos Eisley meetings was to take place. He had called the meeting. The other party would take every step to place him at a disadvantage. He knew he didn't need to be worried, given his plans, but still, he wanted Mullen and Vika nearby, checking things out. Whatever faults his children had, there wasn't much they couldn't handle if things came to a fight. He was mostly sure things wouldn't, but he still reached down to pat the handle of his blaster again.
You won't need that,
a voice said from behind him. Oren turned to see Bojo Bupa sitting in the back seat of the USV-5, pointing a blaster at him. He hadn't heard the Gossam get in, but now he saw the creature's Gamorrean companions taking station at either side of the vehicle, parting only to permit the entry of a character Oren had never met before.
My speeder!
The scaly-faced Klaatuinian said, taking the driver's seat. The bronze-skinned creature then burst into giggles.
I want one! Ah, I want one!